now you're in a muted situation, but as I've mentioned to you before, you can raise your hand electronically, and you do that by hitting star 61. So anytime during this call, if you'd like to say something, you just hit star 61, and on my computer, I see that your little hand is electronically raised, and I'll call on you. Also, I have a list of all the phone numbers here, so I know when you join the call and I know when you leave the call. And, of course, if you have to leave the call early, I understand, and that's why we're recording this call. For those of you who have signed up for the calls, I've sent you instructions about how you can go onto iTunes and join the podcast, and this will be delivered to you. If you haven't gotten that information, please write to me at dave@daveellisleadership.com. And I'll send you the directions. If you've tried those directions and they don't work, please let me know. Again, email me. I will get you in touch with our technical person because I want to make sure that if you want to listen to the call again or if you want to pass this on to somebody, you can. So, again, during this call, if you'd like to raise your hand electronically, please just hit star 61. Several times during this call, I'm going to ask you to speak because this call, even more than the previous ones, is very interactive. So please have a paper and something to write with and a pencil because I'm going to ask several times for you to do an exercise during our time together. And these exercises are so that you don't just spend time on this call listening to some good ideas that I have, but rather that you spend time on this call creating your own good ideas, maybe some that are almost identical to the ones that I have. Maybe some of your best ideas will be completely opposite to the ones I have. So please listen with that idea in mind. And then I'm going to ask you to commit to some of those ideas, not publicly, unless you want to, but to commit to actually putting into practice what you're thinking about. Now, if you're listening to the recording of this call, please do the same. Don't just passively listen to it, but listen with paper and pencil. Listen with your creative hat on. Listen as a person inventing how you can create work-life balance. That's the idea. Set up to 17 ideas. Now, I'm not sure I'm going to get through all of them because that's a lot, but I'm going to give you up to 17 of my best ideas and then ask you to create even better ones. And along with those ideas that I come up with, I'd like you to take and see, well, can you implement it or not implement it? So here we go. Number one, which is in order to get work-life balance, start by committing to it. Start by writing down, even right now, something like, I will create work-life balance. Or something even maybe stronger. I promise to create work-life balance. Or maybe something stronger than that, like, I promise to create my work to be balanced part of my life by October 15th, 2008. Note. Now, for some of you, that'd be too fast. For some of you, that'd be too slow. But I'm suggesting that the first step to create this kind of a life that's not overloaded with work is to promise to create it. And make a promise even though you're not sure how you're going to fulfill it. Because that's the kind of promise that really moves you forward. And then share that promise with important people in your life, with more than one person in your life. So, again, I'm going to pause because I recommend you do it right now. This is the best idea I have. Now, I've got 16 more, which will work great, but they'll work even better if you do this one, and if you do this one now. So I'll be quiet for 30 seconds. And during that 30 seconds, I'd like you to actually take your pencil and write down some version of I promise to, I commit to, I will. Write it down, and then later tell others. I'll be quiet now for 30 seconds while you write. Please begin. All right. Thank you. Next idea. Define work-life balance for yourself. Now, I know that we all have a different definition. But in order to achieve this thing that many of you just committed to and that most of you want, I think it's important that you have your definition. And a definition that for you really strikes at the heart of the desire that you have. Now, for some of you, work-life balance might be defined in terms of number of hours of working versus non-working. For some of you, it might be defined in how much energy you bring home with you after a day's work. For some of you, it might be defined as how much enjoyment you get out of work versus how much enjoyment you get out of not working. So what I'd like you to do is now take 45 seconds and write a definition with detail. That's why I want to give you 45 seconds. And then, this time, I'm going to hear from several of you. But I don't want to hear from you until you actually take the time and do the work. Because when you write down with specificity what it is that you're wanting, that way, you're way more likely to get it. So please now, 45 seconds, start writing your definition with detail of work-life balance. Begin. I'd like to hear from you. So please hit *61. I'd like to hear from a few of you. Just read maybe some portion of, or read and then edit as you go along. Your definition, and a definition that stirs you. So please hit *61. And if you're not even sure if that's the best definition, just let us hear, because as we hear from you, it's more likely that we'll be able to refine our own. So when you think of what it is that you really want, regard to your work, the time at work, the energy at work, please hit *61 so that we can hear from you. You know what it is that you think. For me, when I started to take this on many years ago, one of the definitions I came up with is that I wanted to go home at night, at the end of work, with more energy than I left, than I came to work with. So I wanted work to be feeding me. So rather than going home and being exhausted, I'd go home with energy. Now, I've just taken you off mute. Please say your first name and where you're calling from and whatever you have to say.
Hi, my name is Steve. I'm from Sacramento, California.
Hi, Steve.
I wrote my definition, and then as you continued to speak, you kind of said my definition. My definition of work-life balance would be in terms of having a state of mind or a state of mental energy where I feel energized and not drained at work. So when that balance starts to get where I'm feeling like work is pulling more energy out of me, then I'm out of balance, but if I'm doing enough stuff in my life that I'm feeling energized at work, that would be my definition.
That's great, Steve, and it really is different than mine, because I was saying that I leave work, but I like yours even better, which is that while you're at work, you're actually still energetic. You're not drained. So if you're not drained at work, that's one way that you know that you've got work-life balance. Thank you.
Right.
Now, so as the rest of you listen to Steve, please add something. Maybe you got inspired by his definition. But I'd like to hear from somebody else. Another way that you can define it. And add detail to it. That's what I'm recommending to all of you. which is that you even include conditions of satisfaction so that you know, you include in your definition ways that will be obvious for you. Another way that you could, another piece that you could add in there is that you don't complain. And that's a pretty clear condition of satisfaction. Is that if that you might want to achieve a work-life balance such that you stop complaining about work. Wouldn't that be amazing if you actually hung around with family and friends and coworkers who didn't complain about work? I know some of you don't, but I'm guessing that a lot of you do. That you actually, to your friends, your family, that's one of my conditions of satisfaction, because when I start to complain to my wife, Tricia, about work, she'll put up with that for a few times, for a few days, and then she just won't put up with it. She just does not enjoy that. So that's another condition of satisfaction, is that you're not complaining. All right, next idea is to set up a monitoring system. So once you know what it is that you want, then start to monitor it and actually monitor it in writing. For example, if your definition of work-life balance has to do with less hours at work, then monitor how many hours you're working. If it's got to do with energy, then start to monitor your energy level. Maybe you could monitor your energy level with a score from 1 to 10 or with a grade level from A to F. So when you leave work or at work and you're totally drained, you're in an F. If you're kind of really a little drained, you're in a D. But if you're energetic and alive, you're in an A. But set up some kind of a monitoring system so that you know if you're starting to hit the target. Now, the monitoring system could be a graph, or it could just be a calendar. The monitoring system might even include other people who are willing to report to you on what they see. Well, again, I don't want you to just hear this idea. What I'd like you to do is actually right now think of a monitoring system, and then I want to hear from a few of you. So I'll be quiet for 30 seconds and think about what kind of monitoring system. Would it be a chart? Would it be a daily chart or an hourly chart? Would it be a grade? Would it be in a calendar? Would it be a journal? Would it involve somebody else? How are you going to monitor whether or not you're achieving this work-life balance? I'll be quiet now for 30 seconds while you think about it, and don't just think about it, though. Write it down. And if you're listening to this on a recording, be sure and do these exercises. Otherwise, these 17 ideas of mine, they're just not going to be very useful to you. Start to write now. Several of you, please hit star 61 on your phone. Just do that now. Just hit star 61 and then tell me, and tell all of us, your monitoring system. Because you probably thought of something better than my examples. And even if you just thought of one of my examples and specific to how you're going to implement it, the advantage is that we'll hear specific ways that you're going to implement it. So please say your first and last name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Dave. This is Jade Young calling in from... Okay. Well, I came up with this thing that I, as a way for me to monitor my energy levels, I just use the basic, like, 10 being a high. And if I achieve, for me, it's like between a 7, 8, or 9 during the day, I feel like I'm in good shape. So I'll aim for 10, but I really also want to give myself some grace in this so that I don't feel like I have to, like, force myself to also be a 10 all the time. And I also just, at the end of the day, I mark it on my calendar. So I have a a monthly calendar by my phone area, and I just put a number down so that at the end of the week I can kind of really get a quick glance through my numbers as to how I'm doing.
Yes. Thanks, Jade. So Jade's already doing this. It's not one that she's just invented, but she's sharing us what she does. So she gives herself an energy grade every day, and she has it so she can see the entire week. And I think that's the key here, which I didn't mention. Make sure that your monitoring system is set up so that it's done in a way that you can see it. Thanks, Jade. And next, please say your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Dave. This is Tricia Schulte calling from St. Paul. I was looking at my definition of work-life balance, and basically what it included was time to do the things that I love and a list of those things. And so I think one thing I might do to monitor that is keep that list with me, and then at the end of every week, circle the things that I actually took the time to do. And to me, that would mean that I had really achieved work-life balance that week.
Ha, I love this. So that in addition to monitoring how you're actually doing on achieving the goal, you can also monitor how often you're implementing the tasks to achieve the goal. Am I listening right?
Yeah, yes.
So you're saying you're going to take all the ideas that you've got on how to achieve this, and every time you do them, you're going to tick it off so you know how often you're actually at least attempting to achieve the goal. Yeah, great. Thanks, Tricia. Time for one more. What else could you do to monitor how you're achieving this? And if you hit *61, you'll pop up on here. You can get your idea. So I'll go on. So my next idea is to create a support group. So once you've set up a monitoring system and you know exactly what you're trying to achieve, then create a group. Now, what I'm recommending you do is create a list of who would be in that group, and write now. You know, don't just write down create a support group, but rather right now write down who's going to be in that support group. So think about your circle. Think about the people you know who would be willing to meet with you maybe once a week, a month. Once a month might be enough for some of you, once every 2 weeks. So how often you want that support group to meet, write that down. And then who are some of the people you would invite? As you think about this list that you're writing right now, think of like your friends, particularly good friends. Some of you might include your spouse or your lover. Heck, some of you could include your boss. Because most of you, your boss, I believe, wants you to have good work-life balance because your boss wants you to be your maximum productivity. And if you're out of balance, you're not in maximum productivity. You're a coworker or two, maybe somebody you supervise, because the people that you're the boss of, the people you supervise, I'm sure they want you to have work-life balance, because otherwise you're just a grouch. Some of you, you know, there's another thing you could monitor, is how often you're a grouch at work. So a coworker, somebody supervised, maybe a life coach or a counselor, maybe a spiritual advisor. So right now you're making a list, is what I'm recommending, of who you will invite and when you'll invite them. I'm going to be quiet, but you can just keep focusing on that list for a minute. You don't have to focus only with me. Now you're going to add for the next 30 seconds who's going to be on your support team. Go ahead. Write. Okay, my next idea is to create a list of the costs of being out of balance. This is so valuable because once you really get in touch with the high price, not having a balanced life, it's more likely that you will create a balanced life. Now, of course, for those of you who are out of balance, some of those costs are just obvious. So you can start with those, because I'm going to be quiet now for 45 seconds, and then I really want to hear from some of you. I'm not going to give you the examples this time. I want to hear your examples. But I'm going to be quiet for 45 seconds while you make your list. Now, as you start that list, the first one or two will just come quickly. But then don't stop writing. That's why I want to give you 45 seconds, because I want you to think about what else you can add to the list. Because if you create a very comprehensive list of the cost of being out of balance, I think it's way more likely that you'll bring yourself into balance. So now, please write. I'll be quiet for 45 seconds. Writing, what other costs? Several of you hit *61. I want to hear some of those costs. Because if there's a cost for you, it's likely a cost for several of us, the rest of us on this call, and when you share your cost or cost, then we can add to our list. So as you listen now, please add what you hear if it's true for you. Go ahead.
Dave, this is Lori Eichels in Kansas City.
Hi, Lori.
Hi. For me, the list of costs can be eating badly, feeling stressed, you know, feeling exhausted, not exercising and then feeling lethargic and aching, could be gaining weight, looking worn out, not smiling and laughing.
That's great. Okay, this is a good list. Now, as you listen, the rest of you, please see if you want to add some of those. Because for some of you, gaining weight is not a cost you want. And I do believe, like Lori does, that for some of you, that's a cost of being out of balance. Or feeling lethargic, or eating badly. Yeah. So, some more. Go ahead.
Dave, this is Susan.
Go ahead, Susan.
I had some of the same ones that Lori had, but I also had that I would have less creativity and less resourcefulness. I would be not as happy, so others wouldn't want to be around me, and then I'd end up being lonely. I definitely would have more arguments with my youngest daughter.
Yeah. Now, please, all of you, as you're listening to Susan's, add some, because I'll bet that many of you will, if you achieve more balance in your life, will not have as many family arguments, whether it's with your daughter, your spouse, your sister, your brother, your children. And I love this one about lonely, because I think people are lonely when they're not enjoyable to be around. You want more invitations? You want more friends? Get happier. That might be a function of work-life balance. Creativity. I do think creativity goes up when balance goes up. Good list. Thanks, Susan. All right. Next idea. Create a list of benefits for being in balance. So what are benefits to yourself, to your family, to your organization? Now, please make this list separate from the list of costs. So you can post both of these lists. Now, that's the next idea. But before you post them, make them. Once again, me just telling you this, that's not going to be nearly as effective as you doing it. I want this call to be effective, so please do it now. I'll be quiet again for 45 seconds. And don't just look at your costs and turn them around, although you can do some of that. Later on, you can even polish this list of benefits. But for right now, you're going to make a list of benefits to yourself, your family, to your organization, of bringing in work-life balance. Please do that now. Write down at least one more benefit. And now hit *61 and share some of your benefits, not the whole list, but two or three of them, so that we can see if we can add those. And as you listen to other people sharing the benefits that they've just written down, you can add some to your list. So don't stop writing right now. Keep thinking, but let people speaking add to your creativity. Go ahead. Go ahead.
This is Shirley, and some of the things that I wrote down were feeling more healthy, and which leads to a higher sense of self-confidence and self-esteem, a sense of inner harmony, and just a more calm approach to life. Also more hopeful and optimistic about outcomes, or just even more detached from what happens, and then more authentic to myself, and save money just in things like making sure all the bills are paid on time so you're not paying little interest charges here and there. So those are just a few that I came up with.
Wow, good list, Shirley. And that's a long list for 45 seconds. So as the rest of you are listening to Shirley, please see if you want to add some of those, like optimistic. Love that one. You're more in balance, you're more optimistic, and you're more detached. You're not as upset. And, of course, you're probably more calm and more self-confident. So good list, Shirley. Thank you. Next person, please say your name, where you're calling from, and add a benefit or two. Go ahead.
I think a benefit might be, this is Frida from Michigan, that I can really develop all aspects of my personality, because some skills that I have are only marginally used at work. So I could be really a more developed, more well-rounded person.
Yeah, thanks, Frida. So with this list of benefits, I mean, well-rounded, most all of us want to be well-rounded. We want to develop some of the skills that we haven't otherwise developed. So when you add, and you can see, because that's my next idea, as I mentioned, is to post these lists. Redo them, rewrite them, and some of you will type them, but I like handwritten also, because the act of penmanship is the act of memory. When you write something, you remember it longer than when you type it, because you've got your kinesthetic system involved, and you're looking at it. It takes most of us a little longer to write something neatly so you can post it than it does to type it. So now take these lists and rewrite them, polish them up, and then post them. Next is to create a list of external rewards. Now this is different than a list of benefits. List of external rewards are what you might give yourself as a reward for changing this habit that you have, this way of being out of balance. Now, again, right now, write down something you might give yourself as a reward. Now, this is not like the intrinsic benefit of it. This is an external reward that you'll actually, once you notice that you've shifted in a great way toward a more balanced life, then you'll say, okay, I got there. And now I get to go to a movie. That's one of my examples. Now I get to have a massage. Now I get a night out. For some of you who are really a little harder case, you might give yourself a new car. A trip to the Caribbean. I know those are kind of extravagant. Those are probably bigger rewards than you would give yourself for just changing this kind of a being. But write down yours. Just write down a reward or two. You would actually be willing to link to this change. Next idea is to implement distress management practices. Like Shirley said, one of the advantages of being, like many of you said, one of the advantages being calm or detached. Detached to me is free from distress. So you can actually start moving in that direction as a way to help achieve that balance. Now, I reviewed on the third call of the first leadership series, I reviewed about over a dozen ways to achieve calmness, to manage distress, whether it's the distress of your mind, which is worry, that mind chatter, or the distress of your body, which we call tension, that pain in the neck. So if you like this idea of actually implementing distress management practices, write yourself a note right now that you'll do it, and write yourself a note by when you'll do it. Or maybe by when you'll listen to the ideas from that third call. That was the call on April 30th, by the way, if you want to go back and in your podcast. You can listen to all those and then actually implement them. My next idea is to set clear boundaries at work. Now, I know you've heard this idea before. Every time people talk about work-life balance, they bring this idea up. But hearing it again is not going to be so valuable, but you writing it down and deciding to do it can make all the difference. Now, boundaries. I'm going to give you some examples of boundaries. For example, time boundaries. So you could say, well, I'm only going to work these hours. Or I'm going to always take a full-hour lunch break. So I'm actually going to have a break during the middle of the day. That's a boundary. And, of course, once you set them, you keep them. Years ago when I was working more than I do now, but I still wanted a work-life balance, I said that I was never going to work at night, and I was hardly ever going to work on the weekend. But yet, I worked 60 hours a week. But my boundary was not at night and not on the weekends. The way I did that is I worked 12-hour days. I went to work at 6 in the morning. I worked straight through, and I went home at 6 at night. So I had essentially every night free except when I traveled, and sometimes at night I would work, and every weekend free except those rare times when I just got terribly behind. So that's an example of a time boundary. Or you could set a space boundary. Space boundary is like where you're going to work and where you aren't. For me, working at home was a space boundary. But for some of you, you may work at home, but like you limit it to a particular place at home. And the advantage of that is that when you go into that place, you're at work, but when you leave that particular room, you're not at work. Another space boundary might be about cell phones or your email. Like you're only going to answer your work phone at work during those hours, or you're only going to have your work email during your hours at work or at your space of work. Another boundary you could set are the do not disturb times, when you won't let work get to you. There's just absolute, even if you're at your work, you can have those. So those are some examples of setting clear boundaries. Next idea is to generate multiple solutions for your work problems that consume you. Because a lot of times what happens is that it's not all of work that gets out of whack. It's some particular problem, some perplexing, persistent, all-consuming problem. So if you have one of those perplexing, persistent, all-consuming problems, then take that on. You could even right now make a commitment that you're going to do that. If you are going to do everything in your power to come up with, first of all, multiple solutions to that problem, and then you're going to implement two or three of the best solutions. Now, this problem-solving method of generating multiple solutions and then implementing your best solutions, I talked about on the first telecourse series, the fourth call, the one on May 22nd, and then also I talked about it on the second call of this telecourse, which is July 14th. So you can either go to the May 22nd call or the July 14th call, and on both of those, I described this method of multiple solutions and solving persistent problems. It's what we do in the workshop. And in the last workshop, actually in most every one of the trainings that I do, one of the pieces of that training is we ask people to bring their three biggest problems, their entire life. And then we go through a 3 to 4 hour long exercise. And over 70% of the participants consistently say they solved one of the three biggest problems of their life. And for most of them, it's the biggest problem of their life. So that's part of what we do in the training. Now, I know a bunch of you aren't going to come to the training and you'd still like to be able to do that. Well, please listen to those telecourses. And take on that perplexing, persistent, all-consuming problem at work, solve it, and I think you're moving toward work-life balance. I'd like to stop here, and I've got some more ideas, as you know, because I told you I had 17 of them, and some of you have actually started to count, see how far along I am. But before I go on, I want to see if any of you have any questions or comments about what I've spoken so far. I know I've given you many opportunities to share some of what you're writing, but now I just want to pause and give you that chance to hit *61. If you just have an idea that pops up, or you have a question about work-life balance, or if you have a question in general about leadership. So right now, if you do, hit *61. And then I'm going to continue, and you might even have a question about the October training that's coming up. But I'll take you off mute, and once you're off mute, say your name and where you're calling from, and then say whatever you want.
Hi, this is Shirley again, and I'm calling from Waterloo, Ontario. And my question is about for those who are self-employed, and I'll maybe speak for myself personally. I think where I realized that the challenge for me in work and life balance comes more in the social arena, because you're out there and the first thing that people do is say, you know, what do you do, or what is your line of work, or you know, that kind of thing. And in that whole coaching process, you know, this whole thing of having that elevator speech, that tagline, and I really began to personally resent that. To sort of say, I don't want to have to have that. I don't want to have to be out there and have to have it when I'm out wanting to have social time. And I began to sort of say, you know what, that can't interfere. That's sort of a boundary I think I began to set. But I think, I would just love to hear your comment about that, because there's so much that I think, you know, part of that whole thing, I guess if you want to call it training or emphasis around all of that. And so how, you know, anyways, I'll leave it at that.
That's very good. Very good question, which is that sometimes when you're out in a social setting, even though you could drum up business, even though you could spread the word about what you're doing when you're self-employed, you don't want to. And in those kind of cases, what you want to do is come up with ways in which you can be polite and not have the conversation go to work. And one of the things I recommend, Shirley, is that you very briefly answer the question and then tell them about something that's beyond work. So, for example, if I'm at a party these days and somebody says, well, what do you do? And I say, well, what I do is I teach and I write books, but mostly what I'm excited about this at this time in my life is my new granddaughter. And I got to babysit her on Saturday afternoon, and it's only the second time she's ever had a babysitter, and my wife and I got to spend time with her 4 hours while my daughter went out, and I got to hold her about 3 of those hours. It was so fun. And then surely what happens is that people will start at that point talking about my granddaughter, or they'll talk about their granddaughter, or they'll talk about something in their family. But I can steer the conversation away from work by very quickly answering a question about what I'm excited about at work, but then saying, and what I'm even more excited about is, and bringing that next thing. Now, another alternative is to say quickly what you do, because people want, you know, if they ask the question, they kind of like some brief answer, and then say, and you know what I'm really interested in is your life. So tell me something about you. Thanks, Shirley. Good question. Any other comments or questions before we go on with these last suggestions of mine for achieving work-life balance? Questions about leadership. Questions about our October training. Questions about ways that you could implement. Yes, go ahead. Say your name and where you're calling from. Go ahead. Just say your name and where you're calling from. Somebody, you might still have your mute button on. It's the 972
okay.
area code.
Can you hear me now?
There you go. I can.
Okay. This is John from Dallas. I am working with a client, and this is representative of several clients I'm working with. This particular person works in a neonatal intensive care, and they're constantly seem to be short-staffed, and, you know, they feel like they have to, you know, do all the work to take care of the patients they have and be thorough, and it makes it to where the staff is constantly overworked. And it seems to be a systemic problem, you know, with the hospital where they work. What do you do in cases like that?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I do is I get them to make a list, John, of about 15 to 25 action plans. So I would help them by coming up with a few myself, but mostly what I do is I just keep encouraging them to say, well, what else can you do? Yeah, I know you're short-staffed, and therefore you're overworked. And when you're overworked, that just makes it harder to leave work with energy. It makes it harder to be in balance. So I'd ask them to come up with at least 15 to 20 reasonably good suggestions, and then prioritize those suggestions and begin to implement them. Now, I think that if you ask that person to come up with their suggestions, it'll be a lot better than you coming up with those suggestions. But I'm guessing on there they're going to have things like talking to their boss and complaining to the people that are in charge of staffing and documenting the understaffing problem. And, you know, they're going to come up with a whole lot of them. And then they start to implement. But for all of you who are assisting others, that's what I recommend, is to come up with lots of solutions and then implementing them. Got one more comment, and then I'll give you my last ideas here. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Steve in Sacramento again.
Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Yeah. So one of what it seems to me often happens is it's a dilemma. So the work life balance that we want, and this is a great idea about creating the list of benefits and so on, those are things we value, and the things that draw us more into work are things we value. And so it's just oftentimes a tug of positives. You've got values on one side and values on the other, and it's the dilemma pulling between kind of two positives that you both want to do, and you just don't have enough time and energy to do it all.
Yes. Great, Steve. So what we're asking is that people choose how much they're going to get the positives of work. because there are positives at work, but too much of a good thing is still, of course, too much. Now, sometimes, if you're in a particular work environment, you'll discover that in that environment, it's not possible to achieve work-life balance. And at that point, the solution might be to get to a new work environment. Because that is, I think, always got to be one of the solutions on the table, which is a new place to work. Now, I like Steve's suggestion, so I'm going to give my next idea here a little out of order, which is to list the benefits of being out of balance. Now, this is not the benefits of work, and I know that's what Steve was talking about, but now I'm talking about what are the benefits of being out of balance at work. Now, you can start to listen to those. This takes a little longer, so I'm not going to give you time to write them all because this takes some real thought. But some of them are obvious. I mean, it might keep your boss off your back. Because if you're always complaining about way too much to do, well, your boss is probably not going to be as critical of you. Or maybe it keeps you from getting more assignments, because if you're... Again, always complaining about you have too much to do and you won't get more work. Or maybe you won't have to deal with problems at home. Or maybe you'll feel needed. Now, this strategy of creating the benefits of a problem is one that requires real introspection on your part. And I recommend you do it. It's one of the techniques that every time I have a problem, it makes solving that problem so much easier when I can see what are the benefits of keeping the problem. When I work with people and ask them this question, immediately they say, well, there are no benefits. I say, well, I think there are. As a matter of fact, I believe that the benefits are greater than the cost. The benefits of keeping this problem in place are greater than the cost. Now, they'll argue and say, oh, no, that can't be. I mean, I can't even think of one benefit. But see, I believe that you all are so intelligent that if you keep a problem in place for very long, it's because it has some hidden benefits that you're not aware of. And once you can list those benefits, then you can ask the following question. How can I get those benefits without the cost? And it's that list and that inquiry which really shifts things. Because let's say that the benefit of being out of balance at work is that it keeps your boss off your back. Well, then you can, and you see that for you that's really true. I'm not saying it is for you, but let's say that for someone that's the truth. Then you can make a list of all the ways that you can keep your boss off your back without being out of balance. If you're already overloaded and you don't want more work, and constantly complaining about how much you have and feeling out of balance is a way that you won't get more, well, then you make a list of all the ways that you could not get more work without being out of balance. If you want to feel needed, well, make a list of all the ways you can feel needed without being out of balance. If you don't want to deal with the problems at home, well, make a list of all the ways that you could avoid the problems at home without being out of balance. Or, of course, you could... make a list of all the ways it would improve your life by dealing with the problems at home. Well, here's another idea, which is move toward financial independence. Because so many people put up with the problem of work-life balance because they don't have the money to change jobs. They use money, or the lack of money, as justification for overworking. Or for working in a job that they don't like. Now, of course, on the short term, I can understand that. In the short term, we might want to work at a job that we don't like for money. In the short term, you might want to work at a job that's out of balance, that's actually where you're short-staffed and where you, in that environment, you're going to be out of balance. You're going to be exhausted at the end of the day. Certainly for a short amount of time, there's justification for staying in such a job. But not for long. Because what you can do instead is use that money that you make from that job, rearrange your budget, create a brand new way that you're interacting with money, move yourself toward financial independence so that you can then solve this problem, which might mean by getting a new job, or it might mean by not working as hard in your current job, even though you're afraid you might get fired. The ideas of moving toward financial independence are on the third call of the first telecourse. That's the call on May 12th. So if this is an idea that you like, well, right now, write down a commitment that soon you're going to go and create and take on financial independence. Next idea. Commit to leaving work with more energy than you came to work. And I use this as an example, but now I'm not wanting it to be just an example. I'm recommending that you actually commit to it. And you commit to it right now. That you commit to leaving your day energetic. Not because you had a bunch of coffee at the end of the day, but because you look back and you're thrilled with what you contributed. And because you did not exhaust yourself. I'm recommending right now you make yourself a promise and you write it down right now that you'll leave work with more energy than you came to work. I got three more ideas. Talk it through. Talk this problem through with somebody else or with yourself. And I actually recommend talking it through with yourself. I think we're often our best counsel. And when you're talking it through with yourself, set two chairs out in front of you. And in one chair, argue for the status quo. And in the other chair, argue for the change. And switch back and forth. And literally talk to yourself, but talk to the two sides of yourself that are able to affect this kind of change. Chair one, argue for the status quo, which is that you're out of balance. There are two, argue for change. And while you're doing that, make some notes. And, of course, what you want is for chair two to win. So this is a debate that you actually are going to stack for yourself before you enter into it. But I believe that when you do this chair swapping and you converse with yourself about this, you'll come up with ideas that we haven't thought of. Which brings me to my next and third favorite idea, which is after this call, sometime in the next day or two, review the ideas that you've written down and add to the list. Now, don't wait for more than 2 days because memory research has demonstrated repeatedly that if you review an idea within 48 hours, you're way more likely to remember it. So please, do this review soon. And then as you review the ideas that you've written down, add to them. And then write down when you'll do them. And of course, one of those ideas might be to have that support group or a support person at least, and then share your list. And my last idea, to commit to a specific strategies right now. So I'm going to be quiet for 45 seconds. I want you to review everything that you've thought of, everything that you've written down, and even things that you haven't thought of, and I'd like you to write down what you will do by when. Now, we started this call by my asking you to write down that you will solve this problem by a particular date. But now I'm asking you to commit to specific strategies. And then I want to hear from you. So I'll be quiet for 45 seconds. You write. You're going to write down what you're going to do by when you're going to do it. And then I'll hear from you. Please write now. several of you please hit *61. I'd like to have you speak it, not just to inspire the rest of us, that'll be good, but I'd like you to speak it because if you speak to this large group of people that are on the call right now and that will eventually be listening to this call, you speak it, it'll be way more likely that you'll do it. So please hit *61 and then speak one of the specific techniques that you'll implement and by when you'll implement it. We'll hear from a few of you. *61, and just tell me what you can be counted on for. What you'll do so that it's way more likely you'll actually achieve this goal that you set out to do. Just to have your work life be an important part of your life, and then to have your non-work. Now, I know that through most of this call, I've implied that when you're out of balance, it's that you're working too much. But I realize that for some people, that's not true. Really occurred to me about 12 months ago that I was out of balance. For me, it was because I wasn't working hard enough. And I really realized that if I was going to be on my deathbed and somebody says, hey, what do you regret? I was going to be that I didn't work enough. So I increased my work. All right, go ahead. What's your name and what's your commitment?
This is Shirley again. I just want to thank you for tonight, and my commitment has to do with sitting with the benefit, like that hidden benefit thing that you were talking about around some key issues at work, to take a deeper look at why I'm, or the problem that may not actually be the problem. It may actually be that I'm not looking at it correctly, and then therefore finding, you know, perhaps more true solutions to the problem rather than trying to address a false problem, so to speak. So that was a really helpful reframe, I guess, for me to take a look at. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Shirley. And it sounds like what we can count on you for is that you will actually continue to do that. You'll continue to look at what's kind of the problem behind the problem. So thank you, Shirley, and really thank all of you for joining the call and for participating and for listening to this call if you're not on it live. I want to remind you again that we're doing a workshop on leadership, and part of that workshop will be assisting people to achieve work-life balance. And also during that work, that leadership training, October 26th to the 28th, we're going to look at relationships. We're going to look at ways that you can, as a leader, really vision long range into the future and then create those visions. Bill and Joanne, Bill Rentz and Joanne Bangs are available after this call if you want to know more about the workshop. Bill Rentz can be reached at 605-390-2343. Joanne Bangs can be reached at 605-390-2275. So please give them a call if you're interested in that workshop. And I've got one more comment, and maybe it's an intention, and then we're going to complete the call. So go ahead.
Hey, Dave, it's Heidi. How are you?
Hi.
I wrote down that I'm going to create a mathematical amount of the number of hours I'd like to have, quote, off per week, and then find ways to schedule the times ahead of time or in the flow of my days just to proactively do that. I'm going to create a symbolic act to identify that I'm, quote, working or I'm off, because for me there isn't any clear delineation. I flow through the house and put a little laundry in over here, and I make phone calls over there, and some of my, quote, work earns me money and some of it doesn't. Some of it involves other people. So I'm just going to kind of notice, because I tend to sometimes envy people that have like 9-to-5 work days, because I feel like I don't have any work days, but I don't have any time off either. It just all goes together.
Yeah, thank you, Heidi. Those are two great intentions. And I encourage all of you to take Heidi's sharing and modify it in some way that will work for you. Because what Heidi said is that she's going to actually schedule in her off time before she schedules in her work time. Yes, great idea. And that you'll have some symbolic way Like, you know, what I do is I change my clothes. When I'm not working, I literally put on my not working clothes. And even on those days where I wear jeans to work, I come home and take off those jeans and put on something else so that I know that I'm now off work. Great ideas, Heidi. Thank you all for participating in this. I know that I ran just a few minutes late, and I look forward to being with all of you again on another telecourse. Good night.